Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming this morning by Joel Slater, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Fallow Time Folk Orchestra, who has prepared some wonderful music for us today. With humility and courage born of our history, we are called as Unitarian Universalists to build the beloved community where all souls are welcome as blessings and the human family lives whole and reconciled. With this vision of the Unitarian Universalist Leadership Council in our hearts and minds, we light our chalice.
It takes two tables to. Oopsie. It's okay.
That's all right. That's okay.
I'm stupid. I'm
One,
stupid.
Two.
It takes a tablespoon of sun.
It takes a tablespoon of sun.
Two cups of blue sky.
Two cups of blue sky.
Stir in the green growing grass.
Stir in the green growing grass.
And a day full of butterflies.
And a day full of butterflies.
Preheat the season.
Preheat the season.
Post one.
Call to worship this morning is from Gene M. Olson. In what form will the Spirit appear to you today? The blossom of a flower, the tug of a child's hand, as a silent twinkling of stars, an old woman smiling at the bus stop, a lover's gentle hug, a presence so close to your soul you could almost touch it, words of truth formed unbidden in your mind. The holy disguised in so many ways, may your senses open wide in recognition. Come, let us worship together.
To lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, these words from Todd Taylor. Who can be certain where the self stops and the universe begins? When we breathe, it is the air from the passing wind that fills our lungs. To our nostrils drift the fragrance of the woodland flower. When we taste, it is of the earth's flavors and its saltiness. When we eat, it is of the field's corn and its wheat. When we open our eyes, they are filled with sunlight and starlight. So who can be certain where the self stops and the universe begins? And now, surrounded by the sounds of our beloved community, we in this space will keep silence for a few moments together. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care those who need our love and support. Will you please send healing thoughts to Caroline Arnold, who is struggling with some health problems? And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and of love, Spirit of mystery and wonder, hear my confession. Yesterday, like every day, was so full. There were emails to respond to and dishes to wash and laundry to do, and I found myself rushing around in a hurry, endeavoring to check all of the items off my list. And meanwhile, the baby played by himself on the floor. His cry called me back, reminded me, tend what's most important. Spirit of life and of love, Spirit of mystery and wonder, hear our confession. Sometimes we forget what's most important. Sometimes in the busyness of our days, we're focused just on accomplishing our tasks. Remind us in this space, in this moment of spaciousness here on this Sabbath morning, remind us of what's most important in our own lives, relationships with ourselves, with each other, with that which is larger than us all. Orient us back to our priorities so that we may live our lives in alignment with the greatest good we know. May it be so, and amen.
Thank you.
I think we need to admit that we humans have not solved the problem of unity and diversity. The three Abrahamic faiths began in unity, but ended up in diversity and often in conflict. Islam has the Sunni-Shia split and the four major legal schools of how to interpret sacred texts. Judaism has diversified into Orthodox, conservative, liberal, Reconstructionist, and many others. Christianity began in unity and ended in a tremendous numbers of different belief systems. To maintain unity, do we need inquisitions and trials of heresy and blasphemy? Well, if you want an answer to these types of questions, you will have to listen to someone else. I am trying to figure out my own relationship to unity and diversity. Unity, the feeling of completeness, of happiness, of not desiring change is what I mean. Not necessarily the feeling of being at one with the universe. I rarely feel at one with the universe and settle for feeling at two with the universe. So I asked myself, what is happening when I feel complete, whole, and would like to spend the rest of my life in this current state? I think the first time I felt this way was when I was a young married man. How unlikely a couple we were. My first question to Kathy, my wife later, upon meeting her at graduate school, was to ask her if she knew an old girlfriend of mine who went to Grinnell for a few years. Kathy was a smart goody-two-shoes, a national merit finalist, took honors classes in high school, and I was lucky to graduate from high school. She grew up in a conservative Baptist home. Her father was in management. My father was active in the union and supportive of the left. And through the years, I think the diversity continued, mainly due to me. Kathy has always struck me as some sort of standard measure of non-weirdness, whereas I think of myself as more and more moving further and further from that standard. But despite all of this diversity, we remain in love with each other, and so the center holds. Another experience of unity in diversity happened. I should say, maybe it's a brief introduction. I'm going to say about SI, or Summer Institute, which some of you may not be familiar with, which is the summer camp, family summer camp that Unitarians go to in this district, and it started way back in 1985. So, the first time we went as a family to UU Summer Camp, Summer Institute, was in 1990. Our kids became part of what were called touch groups, where the kids would meet together and talk. The talk was led by a touch group leader. My son's group was headed by a gay man. I admit that while I have never had any hostility towards gay men, I did feel a bit uncomfortable. Not sure why now, but I did. Maybe I was less of the essentialist I currently am and thought he was so cool that he would convert my son to the other side. My attitudes about homosexual men were generally formed by movies, and I didn't see them so much as the gay people as the sad people, because so many of those movies, and I have to kind of break text here to explain a little, so many movies that I saw seemed to present gay men as very sad and searching and not very fulfilled. The movie that I particularly noted here was a movie a while ago called The Boys on the Bus, which had a large impact on my thoughts about gay men. But more and more, as I got to know Hal, he began to seem less and less weird, and I began to seem more and more weird in my own eyes for having these reservations. As I remember, he was the first gay person I got to know on a personal basis. As I began to get to know him better, my homophobia began to diminish. I clearly remember the day at SI 1990 when I was standing at the urinal at Bethany College and Hal walked in to use it also. I felt a slight twinge of anxiety course through my body and my urinary stream diminished for a moment. But it all dissipated quickly, and I walked out of that bathroom a better man. I shared this story with Hal many, many years later. He laughed and said, not to worry. He had seen them before. My point is not that love tolerates diversity, but rather that often when you get to know people, diversity just doesn't seem to be that diverse.
And Joel did ask Hal Dixler his permission to share that story with you. Of all the rituals we practice in Unitarian Universalist congregations today, I think that the flower ceremony may be the only one that is uniquely ours. I love this ceremony for its simplicity and its power. The leading message is clear. There's unity in our diversity. We each contributed a flower to the vases that we have here today. The diversity of the flowers represents the diversity of the people now gathered. Each flower and each person is enough all on its own. And yet, when joined with others, new possibilities emerge. The diversity of color and fragrance creates a stunning bouquet. The diversity of perspective and experience creates a vibrant congregation. We experience unity in our diversity, and we know it is good. Looking underneath the leading message, though, I think there is another message that's also true. There is diversity in our unity, and that's good, too. I believe that appreciation and respect for our diversity is a core value of Unitarian Universalism. And I also believe that learning to live into that reality of diversity can be a challenge. We find comfort in familiarity. There's nothing wrong with our desire to be comfortable. However, there's more to life than comfort. Our lives are made richer every time we stretch far enough beyond our comfort zone to get to know another person, another people, a culture, a cuisine, a language, a land, or a way of life that's different from our own. And yet that stretching can be uncomfortable. That's why I wanted Joel to share that story with you, especially the one about Hal Dixler. I don't think that it's often that we tell each other the truth about the discomfort that we experience when we encounter people, experiences that are outside our comfort zone. Joel's experience is not anomalous. Most of us know what that feels like, that anxiety when we're confronted with difference. How many of you have felt that anxiety when confronted with difference? That's just normal. It's natural. And yet, we know that there is great richness when we figure out how to break through our discomfort to expand our horizons, widen our circle of care, and get to know people who are different from us. The stretching can be uncomfortable, and we can move through the discomfort. I think in Joel's story there are some clues about how to do that that are really valuable that I'd like to lift up. The first clue is curiosity. Instead of distancing from Kathy when he realized that her experiences were very different from his own, instead he expressed curiosity about who she was and how she got to be who she was, what her family was like, the ways in which she had been shaped and formed. Curiosity. Curiosity can help us stretch through. The second clue is the willingness to notice our own judgments. In Joel's story, instead of projecting his judgments about gay men onto Hal, thereby making him an unknowable other, that happens sometimes, Joel was willing to admit to himself that he had developed negative preconceived ideas about gay people, especially from the movies that he had seen in the 70s and the 80s. Willingness to recognize our own judgments can help us break through. The third clue is the willingness to tolerate our own discomfort long enough to let it dissipate. If Joel had surrendered to his anxiety and discomfort, he would have missed out on an important opportunity for his own growth, not to mention the opportunity for friendship and a widened understanding about what it means to be gay. Three important clues that can help us encounter difference. Curiosity about other people, willingness to notice our own prejudices, and the willingness to tolerate our own discomfort long enough to move through it to comfort. These are skills that we can use to help grow in our individual lives. And they're also skills that we can use to help grow as a congregation or any community that you're part of. Just like people, congregations also have identities. So what's the identity of this congregation? This congregation bears the imprint of history. This congregation was founded by a small group of residents in Kent 148 years ago. It was born of war-weary people who wanted a congregation in which they could proclaim the saving gospel of universalism, the good news that all souls would ultimately be redeemed by a loving God. Though the congregation became Unitarian Universalist when the two denominations merged in 1961, the Universalist spirit that proclaimed that God is love remains central to this congregation's identity. If we were to write up the story of this congregation, we'd have to talk about how that history has shaped our present identity. We'd also have to talk about our present theological diversity and the way that we have learned to stretch, to grow beyond our own discomfort, to make room for many points of view. Some Unitarian Universalist congregations still struggle with the fact of the theological diversity that is present in this denomination, especially with the division between atheists and theists. And sometimes in making room for Christians, even though this denomination has its roots in Christianity. The reactivity that many people feel against the Christianity in which they were raised, if they chose to reject that and then become Unitarian Universalists, sometimes plays itself out in our congregations, making those who identify with Christianity and find inspiration in the life and teachings of Jesus sometimes a little uncomfortable. And I'm not saying that we have totally solved that problem. I think that sometimes little hints of it pop up, but I think that we're doing really well, and I think that we've made a lot of progress in recent years. There's room here for people with a wide diversity of theological beliefs. We're also doing really well when it comes to age diversity. Though we have just over 200 adult members of this congregation, we have 100 kids enrolled in our religious education program. That ratio is not typical for any congregation, not just Unitarian Universalist congregations. We have a lot of kids relative to the number of adult members in our congregation. And that is another blessing of this congregation. We value young people. We value children. We value youth. We value young adults. And we find ways to try to express that so that children, youth, and young adults want to be a part of this community. We're doing really well with age diversity. Likewise, we've established ourselves as a welcoming congregation for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and trans people. That part of our identity is very well known, not only within the congregation, but in the larger community. Every single year, there's a new religion reporter for the Daily Kent Stater, and I think that every single year, I'm on their docket of people to interview. Because we have a diverse congregation that welcomes GLBT people. That's another important piece of our identity. Still, another important piece of our identity, our diversity, is our economic diversity. In this congregation, there are people of very, very limited means and people of quite significant means and everyone in between. In all of these ways, theology, age, sexual orientation, gender identity, and socioeconomic status, I would say that we have a richness of diversity in this congregation. There are other ways in which our diversity is much more limited. Politically, we tend to be very progressive people. Over the years, I've had several conversations with people in our congregation who hold conservative political points of view. They've told me that they sometimes feel uncomfortable here and alienated when others make disparaging comments about Republicans, for example, or about conservative foreign or fiscal policies. When it comes to making room for people with conservative political opinions, I think we have some growing still to do, some stretching still to do to get through whatever discomfort is causing that alienation that happens and to widen our welcome. I think we've got room to grow. Likewise, I think we've got room to grow in making people of color feel welcome here. The majority of the regular participants in this congregation identify as white. Over the years, I've had several conversations with people of color who have attended this congregation either once as a visitor or over a series of weeks and sometimes even months about their experience here. what it's like to be a minority in this congregation. And like people who hold conservative political points of view, people of color tell me that it can be alienating, difficult, and lonely to be a person of color in this congregation. I remember one conversation that I had a few years ago with a woman who had been attending here for 3 or 4 months with her daughter, a woman of color. She asked to make an appointment with me, and as we sat down, she told me that the reason for the appointment is that she wanted me to know that she was leaving the congregation and to thank us for her experience here and to express some personal things to me about her relationship with me and about the wonderful things that she had found here. It was clear to her that she is a Unitarian Universalist, crystal clear. This is the congregation that she would like to be a part of, she told me. However, every single day of the week, her and her daughter are one of the only people of color in their schools, in their workplaces, in the communities that they circulate in, and they can do it again on Sunday. They need to be in a place where they see people like themselves. And so they were leaving, she told me. But this was where she wanted to be. So get more diverse, she said, and I'll be back. Many of you know that I'm active at the denominational level with a group called Unitarian Universalist Allies for Racial Equity. I'm completely committed to the vision of a multicultural, multiracial religious community, and it breaks my heart to know that so few of our congregations have found a way to live into that vision. In this, we're not alone. This is not a particular failing of Unitarian Universalism. This is really a struggle of religious communities, still persisting. In a recent survey of Protestant pastors, 86% of them reported that their congregation is made up predominantly of one racial or ethnic group. In contrast, in another parallel survey, when adults in the United States were asked about diversity in congregational life, 3/4 of the people polled said that congregations should be diverse, at least diverse enough to reflect the diversity in their own communities. The most recent census data for Kent indicates that 83% of the people living in this city identify as white. What would it be like if this congregation had 20% of the people, children, youth, young adults, and adults of color? How would that change our experience? I think our experience would be richer and stronger and more whole. I'm motivated by that vision of wholeness. Wholeness for me, wholeness for you, wholeness for people of color who are already Unitarian Universalists, people of color who would like to be Unitarian Universalists but would like us to be more diverse, people of color who would find wholeness here if we could make them welcome. Wholeness for us all. So how do we get there? I think that part of the journey involves the work of anti-racism. That's why I do the work that I do, educating white people about whiteness, workshops that I lead for other Unitarian Universalists all across the country. Part of growing toward wholeness involves learning about our own identities. The work of multiculturalism is another part of the journey. We're already adept at translating our theology so that it can be understood by theists and atheists alike. Some congregations are beginning to translate their language so that it can be understood by people for whom English is not their first language. The Unitarian Universalist congregations in San Jose, Texas, and San Diego, and LA, and California are all offering services in both English and Spanish. In their context, it makes perfect sense. There's another brave experiment happening in Unitarian Universalism, and that's at All Souls in Tulsa. I told you that I was there a couple of weeks ago. Some congregations are working to translate their language. At All Souls, they're working to translate their liturgy. Liturgy means literally the work of the people, but it refers to the order of service in a Unitarian Universalist congregation, in any congregation. And our order of service is a very Protestant order of service. If you were to go to a Disciples Church or a United Church of Christ or a Presbyterian congregation, you would recognize their liturgy because ours is very similar. At All Souls in Tulsa, they are trying something that I think is really innovative. They are having 3 distinct services every Sunday morning. So the first service is a humanist service. At that service, the ministers don't wear robes or stoles. The music is jazz music. There are no prayers. The sermon feels kind of like it's kind of delivered in the style of a lecture. It's a very low church humanist service. Their second service in the morning is what they call a traditional service, and it kind of looks like this service. It's the traditional liturgy of Unitarian Universalism. Their third service of the morning is in the liturgy of Neo-Pentecostalism. And they have a praise band, and it begins with multiple songs, praise music, most of which come from the Neo-Pentecostal tradition, and the words are rewritten to be Unitarian Universalist words. There is a feeling of embodiment, people standing, waving their hands in the air. The preaching is call and response. People call back to the minister. There are multiple prayers, singing, music woven throughout the service. The message at all three of those services, the humanist, the traditional, and the Neo-Pentecostal service, the message is the same, translated just slightly. So the sermon in the first service, which is called a talk, and then the sermon in the second and third services, it's the same sermon, translated just slightly to best reach the target audience that is drawn both to that theology and to that liturgy. And one of the interesting things about the experience that folks are having at All Souls is that some people who have a humanist theology are drawn to the Neo-Pentecostal service because they like the liturgy. People make their choices not only based on theology, but also based on liturgy. I want to just say a couple more words about this Neo-Pentecostal experience. Marlon Lavenhar is the senior minister at All Souls, and he's done an extensive amount of research on Pentecostalism, Neo-Pentecostalism, both in the United States and around the world. And part of what he's concluded is that as Neo-Pentecostalism has grown up, it became one of the fastest growing denominations around the world and attracted a great many number of people, especially lots of people of color, not only African Americans, but also Latino, Latinas, Hispanics, Asian Americans, Africans, all around the world, people have been drawn to Pentecostalism because of the power of the liturgy. It's a very different kind of liturgy than we experience. It's very embodied. And that is very powerful for lots of people. So as people have grown up in Pentecostalism, there have been a large number of people, as happens in any religious tradition, who have rejected the theology, who have come to say, I don't believe the truths proclaimed by the Pentecostal tradition. And so they've stepped away. But what feels like church to them, because it's the kind of church that they've grown up in their whole life, feels like Neo-Pentecostalism. And so the great innovative vision that they've had at All Souls that I think is so powerful is that if they can package a Unitarian Universalist theology in a Neo-Pentecostal liturgy, it would attract people who find that liturgy means home to them, means church to them, but who are attracted to our theology. And they have experienced that happening at All Souls and have grown not only in numbers of members of the congregation, but also in diversity. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant experiment that they're conducting, and it has, I think, a lot that we can learn. So for the last several years here in this congregation, we've been focused on expanding our space, and we are like almost there. We're on the cusp. That dream is becoming a reality. We have the property now. We have the teams in place to build the new building, to raise the money to build the new building. I think before long, we will be having a huge celebration to inaugurate our new space. So here's the thing. Now, as we're moving into that vision, I think the time is ripe to articulate what is the vision after that. After we finally achieve the building, then what are we trying to do? Who are we trying to become? Where are we trying to go? We need to have that vision in place so that once we get into our new building, it's not the end of the story. We have a sense of where we're being called next. And I'd like to make a suggestion. I'd like to suggest that our vision, a central part of our vision for the next 20 years after the new building is in place, is becoming a more multiculturally diverse congregation. Naming it as part of the future we dream can help us prioritize the work that it will take to live into that future. Now, we may not start having services in Spanish. I don't think that fits our context. And we may not start having a Neo-Pentecostal style worship service. Maybe that doesn't fit our context either. I am sure of this, though. Every journey begins with a step. What will our next step be? What if we decided that we were going to craft an intentional outreach campaign because we're going to have all this more space in our new building, more room for more people, and so we decide to conduct an outreach campaign and we intentionally reach out to people of color in Kent and surrounding towns? What if we investigated our website and the artwork and the music that we have on Sundays and our greeting practices in order to be sure that we're prepared to welcome people of color in a way that truly feels welcoming? We already have unity in our diversity. Imagine how our life together would be richer and more whole with even more diversity in our unity. I pray we take the next step. Good things have been happening here at the church again this week. If you didn't, please take a moment after the service and notice that there's another fence going along the back of the property that we just acquired. That was built by some volunteers over the weekend. Were you one of the helpers? Raise your hand so we can thank you. They're not here. They'll be at the next service. Randy Rahutsky was the leader of that. Please issue your thanks. The reason that fence was put up is so that we can finally have an outdoor play space for the kids in the congregation. There's just a little work left to do to make it a reality. If you want to help, let me know. That's how we do things around here. Everybody shares their time, their talent, and their treasure. Our worship this morning has ended. Let our service this morning begin. You have gifts and talents. The world needs you. Go in peace.